Welcome to Locked On Warriors, your daily podcast on all things Warriors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Wes Goldberg, Warriors beat reporter for the Mercury News. Today's show is brought to you by Built Bar, the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off your next order. On today's show, I'll tell you about the most important developments from the first week of Warriors minicamp. Andre Iguodala compares the Heat to the Warriors, and then I end the show with one more question about the Warriors tax bill.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
The Warriors begin their second week and final week of minicamp in the double today, and there were already some important developments in week one, and I want to get to a few here. The first one being Klay Thompson, who is back practicing with the team for the first time in more than a year, but who Steve Kerr acknowledged wasn't in the best shape. And look, I'm not worried about that. We shouldn't expect for Klay to be in the best shape. He, again, hasn't played, let alone a game, in a group workout environment for more than a year with this team. He's coming off that ACL tear, but I think one of the things with him is that the shooting is going to always be there. What they need to figure out, what they need to measure last week and then this upcoming week, is how much weight he could put on that knee. Can he move laterally? Can he move side to side? Can he move up and down? Can he just get up and down the floor the way that he used to? Because if he can't do those things, again, I'm not too worried about what he could do on offense, but I'm more worried about what he can do defensively. Because he was Golden State's defensive stopper, the point of attack guy, right? He was the guy that you would throw on Kawhi Leonard and LeBron James and stuff when it wasn't Kevin Durant. And now with Durant gone and Klay Thompson coming off of a major injury here, if he can't be that, then I don't really know who that wing stopper for Golden State is. Yeah, you can throw Draymond Green on those kinds of players, but you need him in the front court maybe more than ever now, seeing where the league is going. Andrew Wiggins can offer you something there, and that would be a huge development for the Warriors if he could be a plus defender for them, because he really wasn't in Minnesota. So Klay Thompson's kind of the first option here, and it's going to be really key for them to measure that conditioning over this next week. But even if he gets back into playing shape, even if his conditioning looks good and the rehab went well and all these things, if the knee is structurally sound, that's the most important thing. But then my other question is, how does he stay in shape between now and the start of next season, which Adam Silver recently acknowledged isn't going to start until at least next year, right? It's not going to start until at least January, I should say. This minicamp has been nice, but it's far from, you know, the solution for the Warriors. I mean, there are a lot of, and look, they're going to be more in the same boat as a lot of teams, but even just a week and a half of group minicamp workouts is not going to be enough for them to be in condition compared to some of these teams in the bubble who had a whole postseason run, you know, as far as the Lakers and Heat are concerned. But, you know, this team's been playing real, meaningful, competitive basketball much longer than the Warriors have. The Warriors haven't played a meaningful, competitive basketball game since March 10th. Most of these other teams have at least played in the last couple of months. And so I think that's definitely a concern for not just Klay Thompson, who hasn't played a meaningful, competitive basketball game since June of 2019, but for the rest of the Warriors roster as well. And so what's next? You can get into some sort of conditioning here. When I talk to players and even coaches around the league, when I ask them, what do you need conditioning-wise for a player who's coming off of an injury, you know, a long-term injury, it's usually about a week, right? A week to 2 weeks is usually the barometer that I get as far as what it takes for a player to really get back into condition, like game, you know, playing shape. And that's all the Warriors have here. And for somebody like Klay, who was late to his quarantine process and couldn't join the Warriors for their minicamp late into the week instead of Wednesday, well, he's got even less of that time, and he may need it more than anybody else in the double. And so I know that the Warriors are happy with this minicamp, but they understand that they're going to need something more probably before the start of next season, whether it's another chance for group workouts or maybe they have to wait until training camp or something. But right now, what they can do after this minicamp is over, they could still do individual workouts. Once the bubble environment is gone, you could still go as a player to Chase Center for one-on-one workouts, work with coaches, go use the weight room and stuff like that. They're going to just have to do a lot of that, and it's going to take guys like Klay Thompson to just do a lot of work on his own, which he has been doing. He's been very diligent in his rehab, but now he's going to have to start the rehab, getting over the rehab process and really getting into the conditioning process, combined with obviously making sure that that knee is okay. Speaking of conditioning, though, Andrew Wiggins, according to Steve Kerr, is in great shape, and I think that's a very encouraging sign for Golden State, who traded for Wiggins at the deadline, traded D'Angelo Russell for him. And he got to the Warriors. There were questions about his work ethic. I mean, from the days in Minnesota with Jimmy Butler calling him and Karl Anthony Towns soft and all these things, there were really, even before that, like his days in high school, days in college, real questions about his work ethic. So the fact that he showed up to this minicamp in great shape is such a great sign for a guy whose work ethic has been questioned. If the Warriors are going to get the most out of Andrew Wiggins, his conditioning, it's going to be key. But it's really just what the conditioning represents, and that is that he's putting in the work, that he wants to be great, and he does want to be better than he was in Minnesota. There's no doubt about that. And so if he is taking advantage of this new environment with the Warriors, this culture that they have of hard work, then if he could sort of identify with that and really live up to these new expectations, which have been adjusted, you know. I know he was a former number one overall pick, but he doesn't have those sort of expectations. He just needs to be, he needs to star in his role, not be a star player. And he may just have the sort of personality that jibes with that a little bit better than, you know, trying to be the number one scoring option on a team. And then there's Marquese Chriss, who's the last development I want to talk about from the first week of minicamp. Kerr said he could be a lot better. And look, Marquese Chriss emerged as the starting center last year when Kevon Looney was injured. They ended up trading Willie Cauley-Stein before the deadline to Dallas. And Marquese Chriss emerged as their starting and most reliable center. Not only because he's a good rim roller, good athlete, can finish above the rim, decent rebounder at his position, but he passes the ball so well. His ball skills are, he's got natural ball skills, which is why he was a lottery pick in the first place. He's just comfortable with the ball in his hands. But instead of having to shoot threes like they had him do in Phoenix, or just be a rim roller like Houston tried to get him to be, the Warriors really embraced what it is that Marquese Chriss can do, and that's pass the ball and just understand where that ball needs to go within the flow of an offense. He's been watching Nikola Jokic and Bam Adebayo closely in this postseason and told us late last week that he wants to be a passing big man like them. He wants to emulate the games of Jokic and Bam Adebayo. And if that is true, and if he can get anywhere close to that, and I don't think he has the genius skills of a Jokic or even the natural skills of a Bam Adebayo, but if he can get any, if he can become a fraction of that for Golden State, with where they got him, off the scrap heap, right? Training camp invite a year ago. If they can get even a fraction of what Jokic and Adebayo can do for their respective teams, that is a major development for the Warriors. And Chris, who already had the inside track of being Golden State's starting center next year, can not only become the starting center next year, but be a very valuable cog and a building block on this team going forward. If you've got Marquese Chriss, who can become the sort of pass-first playmaking big man that so many of these teams that are gone deep in the playoffs thrive with, you combine him with a healthy Kevon Looney, who is so versatile defensively, and whatever floor spacer that they may acquire or traditional size center that they could acquire in the offseason, you've got a really great stable of centers that you're going to be able to use next season. And so if Marquese Chriss is taking that next step, and Steve Kerr is right in saying that he can get a lot better, that's a great thing for the Warriors. Andre Iguodala is going back to the finals, so he gets to stay in the bubble a little longer, but to keep eating right, he might want to use DoorDash. Between your never-ending laundry cycles and incoming emails, you've got plenty on your to-do list. Give yourself one less thing to worry about and let DoorDash take care of your next meal. DoorDash is the app that brings you food you're craving right now, right to your door. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be left safely outside your door with the new contactless delivery drop-off setting. With over 300,000 partners in the U.S., Puerto Rico, Canada, and Australia, you could support your local go-tos or choose from your favorite national restaurants like Chipotle, Wendy's, and the Cheesecake Factory. But go ahead, support those local restaurants that are in your community and do it safely. There are thousands of restaurants open for delivery on DoorDash that need your patronage now more than ever. Just open the DoorDash app, select your favorite local restaurant, and your food will be left at your door. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more. Just download the DoorDash app and enter the code LOCKEDONNBA. That's $5 off and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and then enter the code LOCKEDONNBA. Don't forget, that's code LOCKEDONNBA for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. Andre Iguodala is going back to the finals for the sixth straight year, and Sam Amick from The Athletic asked him about the difference between Heat culture and Warriors culture, and I thought it was very interesting. I want to read this to you, a quote from the story, which this is just a small portion of it, and I would encourage you to go ahead and read the article in full, but Iguodala tells Amick, "It's just that you can take two different roads to success. At the end of the day, the principles are still the same. You come in, you work hard, the talent is going to take you to the top. That's sports in general. The most talented teams are going to get there at the end of the day and probably going to have the best shot. And then however you figure out how to bring together everyone, whether it's through yoga or meditation with the Warriors or here in Miami, where it's a little bit of a different type of mindset, where it's that we're going to get through this pain together and that's going to get us to the next level. It's just different ways of taking that talent to the next level, and both have had success in the ways that they've gone about it. There's a deep appreciation for both. I see here for myself, actually, the preparation here on the court is such that going right into the game, I don't even have to work myself into a lather. Whereas with the Warriors, I could kind of slowly work myself into it, but it was more of a freelance. There's different ways of going about it, and with both teams, when I needed to be at my peak, I was there." Iguodala hits on something very important, regardless as if you go on yoga retreats or show up for 4 a.m. workouts. Good teams work hard on their conditioning, on their craft, and on their film work, and the most talented teams that work hard are usually there in the end. We get too in the weeds with culture stuff, when we talk about culture, like team building events and things like that, or when Steve Kerr has his team do a yoga or a meditation retreat or whatever. All that stuff is good, but that's not necessarily culture as much as it's identity, right? Culture is really one of two things. You have a weak culture or you have a strong culture. You talk about that with Fortune 500 companies all the time. Do you have a weak culture or a strong culture? That's really all a culture can be. Identity is more descriptive. And I think we kind of mix up those two things a lot. The Warriors have a strong culture, right? But their identity is what is very Hite Ashbury, West Coast, Orange Theory kind of thing. The Heat also have a strong culture, okay? Equally as strong as the Warriors, okay? Two equally very strong cultures with championship pedigrees. But their identity is more gritty, Northeastern, punching frozen cows to harden your knuckles type. The Warriors teach their players to acknowledge the pain and conquer it with their mind. The Heat teach their players to embrace the pain and break through it. Either way, they get the best of the pain, and their talent reaches new championship caliber levels. Neither is right or wrong. The only thing you need to do is build a strong culture and then stay committed to your identity. So, for example, it would be strange if Steve Kerr ran his practice like Eric Spoelstra does, and vice versa, right? And that's what Iguodala here is getting at. He doesn't like to compare cultures because you can't compare them, right? They're the same. The cultures are the same. They're both strong. That's all a culture can be, is weak or strong. So when a reporter asks him about comparing those cultures, they're just asking the wrong question. But both cultures are the same thing, right? The right question would be asking Iguodala to compare the different identities of the teams, the different coaching styles, if you would. That is a more appropriate question. Nobody doubts that both the Heat culture and the Warriors culture are strong. But it's the way they go about establishing that culture through their identities that are really foundational with Golden State to Steve Kerr and Bob Myers and Joe Lacob. And with the Heat, it starts with Pat Riley and it works its way down to guys like Eric Spoelstra, who has become as much a part of building that culture as Pat Riley has. And I actually don't think he gets enough credit. But it's, to me, a testament to Andre Iguodala for being able to fit comfortably within both of those teams, within both of those identities. And he clearly has, right? He was huge in that closeout game for the Heat on Sunday night. Okay, and we've seen him rise to the occasion over and over again in the Golden State. And that's why he's part of six straight finals teams now. It's why the Heat traded for him at the trade deadline. And so I do think that for a team like the Warriors, right, you just know the culture is there. But now think about those other teams that haven't established a culture like Golden State has. Think about the Warriors in 2009, 2010, without the culture. There's a lot of teams right now. Let's take the Sacramento Kings, for example. They want so desperately to establish a culture like the Warriors and like the Heat and like the Spurs and like the Raptors. But too often, owners and general managers and decision makers try to shortcut this thing, confusing identity with culture. And so you hire maybe a Luke Walton, who can preach a lot of those same things that Steve Kerr preaches and do all the meditation retreats and have the guest speakers and take the players to the movies instead of doing a practice one day. And just do all that stuff. You know, ask the players about their wives and their kids and whatever. Like all that stuff that players love about Steve Kerr. But it doesn't necessarily translate into a strong culture. And you need more than that. You need foundational fortitude. You need it to start at the top with ownership. And that's why great owners tend to win in this league, is because there is an organizational culture. The Warriors are not just great on the court, but they're great in a lot of different aspects. Their community relations department is phenomenal. Their gaming team has had success. Their PR team has done a great job with us. There's just things that good organizations do, and it's not limited to the court. And that's the sort. And they, by the way, the Heat are the same way. The Spurs, the same way. That's where culture starts. And of course, you need a coach who could be the figurehead and present that as middle management to players. But it can't just be the coach. And it can't just be the GM. And it can't just be one star player, by the way. It's a team effort. And it takes a long time to build, to cultivate. And it took a long time for the Warriors. It took a long time for Miami. It took a long time for San Antonio. It took a long time for Toronto. But once you have it, it's very hard to shake it and get rid of it. And the Warriors proved that this last year. They lost 50 games, won only 15 of them. Worst record in the league. And yet are still regarded as one of the best culture teams in the NBA. It doesn't go away with one losing season. Now, you can't have a bunch of losing seasons. But as we've seen with Miami, and I think we'll see shortly with Golden State, teams with great cultures don't string together losing seasons that way. One of the biggest reasons for San Antonio's success over the last 20 years was because of that culture. And when Miami decided not to tank when LeBron left, they understood that, yes, tanking could have been the right move, but we would be sacrificing the culture that we've worked here to build and the strong working culture we've worked here to build and the identity that we have established. And you can't just sacrifice both of those things in the name of tanking, even if on a spreadsheet that looks like it's the right thing to do. The Warriors did not tank. They lost Steph Curry for a full season, Klay Thompson for a full season, Kevon Looney in and out of the lineup, Draymond Green in and out of the lineup. They lost Kevin Durant. They did not tank, just like the Heat did not tank for the year LeBron left. They ended up picking in the lottery. They took Justice Winslow that year. The Warriors will be picking in the lottery this year. That doesn't mean they're bad, necessarily. It means they had a bad season, and that's a very different thing. The identity and the culture is going to be the same, and I think just like with Miami, Golden State will be right back as a contender very soon. Probably sooner than the Heat were, because they still have Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. And Draymond Green. And so I think Andre Iguodala's words spoke to that. I think they were very astute, very observant. And it was really cool. And now, by the way, the Lakers and Heat are in the finals. I think that the Lakers should be the favorite. But I do think that there's a path to a Heat win. I just want to touch on this quickly. But again, the Lakers will be and should be the favorite. And I think they end up winning this thing. I've picked the Lakers from the beginning of the season. But when Game 1 starts Monday... Or I'm sorry, Wednesday, I think that the Heat still have a path to winning. Number one, they have better shooting than Lakers. The Lakers got to where they were because their three-point shooting hit during the postseason in a way that mattered. Going into the playoffs, a lot of people had questions about whether or not the Lakers could make enough threes to get out of the Western Conference. They did make enough threes. They are out of the Western Conference. But the Heat are a much better three-point shooting team on balance. And if they are hitting threes from the perimeter with Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero and if Andre Iguodala... Like, I knew the Heat were going to win that last game, that game six, when Andre Iguodala made two threes in the first quarter. I was like, it's done. I've seen this with the Warriors. When Iguodala is hitting threes like that, the Warriors were unstoppable because you knew what you were getting from Steph and Durant and Klay. the Heat are kind of similar, where you know what you're getting from Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo and Goran Dragic. But if you get a big game out of another guy like Iguodala, well, then it's game over, right? I think if the Heat can get some stuff going like that from their shooting, it could be very similar. Their bench is really good. They've got a deep bench of guys who can guard LeBron James. Now, LeBron has been, you know, of course, and always is otherworldly in this postseason, but they've got Jimmy Butler to throw at LeBron. Jay Crowder can take a run at LeBron. Iguodala obviously has a lot of experience guarding LeBron, and I think that's going to be very important for them too. And then, of course, there's the Bam Adebayo versus Anthony Davis matchup. Nobody has been able to keep up with Anthony Davis. Now, Nikola Jokic went toe-to-toe with him in the finals as far as a production standpoint, but could not stop Anthony Davis on the defensive end, right? So it's one thing to go toe-to-toe on offense, but you got to do it on both sides. Anthony Davis was able to take advantage of Jokic when Jokic was defending. He's not going to be able to take similarly advantage of Bam Adebayo. He's just not. All right, Bam's been one of the best players in the postseason. I would argue that Jimmy Butler's not even Miami's best player. It is, in fact, Bam Adebayo. And they will talk about it like that. So if Bam can put Anthony Davis into tough situations and not get taken advantage of on the defensive end, I don't know that Bam is good enough yet to make this matchup a wash, but it could be much more even than any other series the Lakers have played, which could be a huge development, because then I think Eric Spoelstra, as good as a coach Frank Vogel has been in the playoffs, Eric Spoelstra has been the best coach in the postseason. The game plans that he's put together against Milwaukee, the adjustments that he made game to game, quarter to quarter, against the Celtics and Brad Stevens. Eric Spoelstra is the best coach remaining in these playoffs, and he has been the best coach in these playoffs. And that, to me, is a very significant edge over the Lakers. Because even if the Lakers take game one, and they've been starting series slow in these playoffs, I actually kind of like Miami in game one, then having Spoelstra there is going to be very meaningful. Very meaningful. And really, to me, it's Eric Spoelstra versus LeBron James, because LeBron could see something once or twice and then make an adjustment for it. Remember it and adjust. Spoelstra is very similar. The two of them are both basketball geniuses. And that's going to be an interesting chess match. Not to take anything away from Frank Vogel. He's done an awesome job, but more of his stuff has been lineup management and having a feel for his stars and knowing when to push what buttons and when to put certain lineups out there and pair what players with LeBron and Anthony Davis. But as far as just that possession to possession, quarter to quarter, game management, making adjustments, that's going to be a lot of LeBron too. Should be fascinating. Because remember, Spoelstra coached LeBron in Miami. Should be fascinating. I've got one more question about the Warriors' tax concerns next. But first, let's talk about Built Bar. If you're like me, when you get hungry, you can make bad decisions. But the best way to avoid blowing your diet is to be prepared. And that's why I always have a box of Built Bars in the kitchen. Not only is this the best tasting protein bar I've ever had, it's the most healthy and it fills me up while I'm busy or I'm on the go. With 18 amazing flavors, including new flavors like caramel brownie, cookies and cream, and apple almond crisp, Built Bars are covered in 100% real chocolate and soft and easy to chew. They taste like a candy bar, but they're low calorie and low sugar while also being high in protein and fiber, making them perfect for keto and other low carb diets. So go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get $10 off your next order plus a free cooler with purchase while supplies last. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. If you haven't already, now is a perfect time to hit that subscribe button to get episodes of Locked On Warriors every day. This is a new segment I'm doing on Mondays called One More Question, where I take a lingering question that didn't make Friday's mailbag and answer it here. So this question comes from Rudy, who writes in, are fans discounting the impact of the huge tax liability if the Dubs are using all of their exceptions? Is it more likely to hinder their use? I've gotten a few questions about the tax bill stuff. And without knowing exactly where the salary cap is going to fall, and then where, you know, in turn, the tax apron lies, it's hard to know how much money the Warriors will have to spend in luxury taxes, even with the current roster, without using the trade exception with that's at $17.2 million, or the mid-level exception that could be, you know, around $5 million. But from what I understand, most projections have next year's cap just at least staying even with this year's cap, which would mean that the Warriors would still be over the salary cap and having to pay the luxury tax, right? Because they're going to draft a player with the number two pick, presumably. That player could be worth somewhere around $10 million a year in that first year. They have, again, the $17.2 million trade exception. They have the mid-level exception. They could sign a couple of free agents at the veteran minimum. So they're going to be one of the highest paid rosters in the league next year, if not the highest paid roster in the league next year. They are going to pay the luxury tax. The other question I would have, or that you know front offices have right now, including the Warriors, is will the NBA hold teams accountable to that luxury tax? Because that's not a set in stone thing. I mean, if the NBA wanted to just give every team a 1 year reprieve on the luxury tax, given how much revenue that these teams lost, to me, that would be very fair. It would make a lot of sense. And if you're a team, it's not like all of a sudden you could just spend the luxury into the luxury tax without penalty, because you're still going to presumably have those contracts for the next season, and you'll be right back into that luxury tax. So if you were a team that never wanted to operate in the luxury tax in the first place, it wouldn't be like all of a sudden you would then jump into the luxury tax, because it would just be so much work to then get out of it a year from now. But for a team like the Warriors or the 76ers or these teams that lost so much revenue and are going to have such bloated payrolls next year, but thought that they would be able to pay it because they were going to have all this revenue coming in from games. And by the way, it's not just the lost revenue from seven missed home games like the Warriors had at Chase Center. It's next year. We don't know if fans are going to be in arenas next year, and if you're going to be able to accrue the gate revenue from those games. And so to me, I think it makes sense if the NBA were to give every team a 1 year, just say, look, no luxury tax for a year. Don't go crazy with this, all right? Or at least maybe balloon the luxury tax line to a really, really high amount and not in line with last season. But make some kind of adjustment to give these teams a break. That to me makes a lot of sense, but that's just my opinion. I haven't heard that that's going to happen. I think the Warriors, their ownership group is still waiting for that kind of, waiting for the league to make a decision there. And that's one of the reasons why the draft was postponed a whole month into mid-November, and why free agency was postponed the same way, is because there's still a lot for the NBA to figure out in conjunction with the Players Association, for teams like the Warriors to then figure out. Because the NBA is going to set some standards, they're going to set the rules and guidelines for this next year, then the Warriors have to take those new rules and then readjust their game plan for next season and going forward. You know, it's going to have ripple effects. So, to answer your question, Rudy, is it going to have an impact? I would imagine that whatever happens is going to have an impact on what the Warriors decide to do. Now, I don't think that they're going to just use the trade exception willy-nilly, just on any player, just to get somebody with it, right? They're not going to say, well, you know, something's better than nothing. In this case, it's not. Something could be very expensive, and nothing versus nothing, which would be not expensive or as expensive. And if that something doesn't significantly increase Golden State's chances at being a contender next year, I don't see Joe Lacob signing off on just using the trade exception on just anybody. And I think Steve Kerr and Bob Myers will have to sell that player to Joe Lacob and the rest of that ownership group. And I think that's fair, considering where everything is. Same thing goes with the mid-level exception. That's what they had to do, by the way, before they signed DeMarcus Cousins with the mid-level exception. They were not planning on using the mid-level exception, right? That team was very, you know, expensive, and they didn't see the need to use it. But when a player like DeMarcus Cousins is available at the mid-level, well, then you got to go ahead and shoot your shot, right? You got to kind of take that risk. That is a high risk, a low risk, high reward prospect. And obviously, it didn't work out with DeMarcus Cousins, but you can't blame the Warriors for at least trying. I think it's going to be similar, you know, a similar type of approach this offseason. Remember to subscribe to new episodes of Locked On Warriors wherever you listen to podcasts. Please rate, review, and say nice things about the show. Thank you to DoorDash and to Built Bar for sponsoring today's show. You can send your comments and questions to me on Twitter at WC Goldberg, or email them to me at WGoldberg@BayAreaNewsGroup.com. Thanks for listening, and stay safe.